Blog Talk Radio. Alita with Say Your Peace Radio Show. Sit back, relax. We want to hear from you. So call in at 347-677-1749 to say your peace. Now, our host, Alita. Well, good evening, everyone. This is Say Your Peace on Blog Talk Radio Show, and I am your host, Alita. And is my co-host in the house?
I am here, Alita. How are you?
All right. All right. We are going to be talking tonight with Catherine Connor, out of Louisiana. And we have on the line right now, we have Miss Mary Neals. Am I right, Miss Neals?
That's right. Just call me Mary.
Mary? Okay. All right. While we're waiting for Catherine to call in and Rosalind, I guess that's who we're waiting for. Yeah, we're waiting for them two to call in so we can get started. Why don't you start by telling me a little bit about yourself, Miss Mary?
Alita, why don't you just try to get my name.
My name is Mary Neal. I'm known online as Mary Loves Justice. I write about abuses, murders, prisoner abuses and murders, secret crimes that the government allows or does against people on a regular basis. And when I say the government, I include local government people like police officers as well as federal government people. And what they're doing is a number of things that I think are of as crimes against humanity. And because these crimes against humanity are happening inside the United States, and because our beloved country, which I love dearly and want to help improve, because these crimes are happening inside America, these crimes against humanity, and this country goes in other countries, supposedly for human rights, I am the most censored individual on the internet.
And are you
so
serious?
You can look up an article. I am absolutely the most censored individual on the internet anywhere. I have a team of four cyber stalkers 24 hours a day. They go online with me whenever I go online, and I've captured their IP addresses and gave them to the United States Department of Justice Office by way of the United States Attorneys. I live in DeKalb County, Georgia.
Miss Mary, just one moment. Is this Miss Catherine?
Yes, it is. Good evening.
Yes. Hello, ma'am. How are you?
Hello. I'm good. Thank you.
Okay. Miss Mary, go ahead and finish saying what you were saying, sweetie. I'm sorry.
Oh, that's fine. Hello, Catherine.
Hello, Mary. How are you this evening?
Well, thank you. Catherine is one of the people that I write about and try to bring to the mainstream online. The thing is that Catherine is a victim of wrongful conviction. I write about a lot of people who were wrongfully convicted, some of them on death row right now. I write about all of that, and my advocacy started when my own brother, Larry Neal, was secretly arrested. That is to say, he was not a prisoner. He was a free person walking the street like you and me. He was secretly arrested and kept for 18 days and being murdered in Memphis Shelby County Jail in 2003. And instead of the U.S. DOJ, which was in place of overview over that jail, instead of that federal agency, instead of them doing their job, they helped the jail to hide the murder. They let the jail put in false paperwork claiming that there had been no lost lives among inmates during the period when my brother was killed, even though
Man.
The USDOJ knew that that was a lie. So they let
Man.
That false paperwork travel in United States federal court, and they let it travel to the USDOJ in Washington, knowing already that they had lost a prisoner, that my brother was secretly arrested, kept 18 days while the jail denied having him, and murdered by means that they refused 9 years later. There'll be 9 years on August 1st. They refused to release any paperwork or tell us how they murdered Larry Neal. And you can
I have
look
a question.
Online.
This is Brian, Salida's co-host. Could you explain to everybody so we'll know what's listening what the DOJ is?
Yes.
The United States Department of Justice. I call it the Department of Injustice. But that's the name for the United States Department of Justice. And I was just explaining how they helped the jail, Memphis Shelby County Jail, to cover up my mentally and physically disabled brother's murder. When he was arrested, he was not a prisoner. He was secretly arrested, and he was kept for 18 days while the jail denied having him. And we're looking for him as a missing person. And the police had missing person reports. And this is the man who they had arrested numerous times in the past because he was an acute mental patient. And the police got sick of fooling with him and decided to arrest him and keep him from his vital heart drugs. Now, if they also tasered him or killed him in a restraint chair or used him for medical experiments, I don't know what they do with mental patients when they get them and keep them I think Latrice Richardson, you may know about her case. She was having a psychological breakdown there in California. She was arrested, and the police there in California say they let her go at 1:30 in the morning,
right.
even though she supposedly had marijuana. She supposedly had marijuana. Can you hear me?
Yeah, go ahead.
Even though she supposedly had marijuana, even though she supposedly charged an $80 dinner she couldn't pay for, and was in the restaurant talking loud and boisterous and having a mental breakdown, they claimed they let her go at 1:30 in the morning, but, of course, nobody saw her body again for a whole year. There's another man named Timothy Bulldog Allen, A-L-L-E-N, these are all black people, by the way, up in Benton Harbor, Michigan. He, the police were called, not the police, but an ambulance was called when he was having a mental crisis at his home and seizures. So his family put him in that ambulance to go to the hospital in St. Joseph, Michigan, which is the next town, and Benton Harbor, Michigan doesn't have a hospital, to my understanding. So he went to the next town, which is mostly white, St. Joseph, Michigan, and he supposedly refused treatment. And so he left the hospital. I think the police escorted him away, and they have a video of him talking to police. And that's the last time he was seen alive. His body was found floating in the river where they were standing on the bridge talking. His body was found floating in the lake 2 or 3 months later. He died in November 2011, and they found his body in January 2012. So mentally ill people like my brother, black people, are going missing after police custody or in police custody and then turning up dead. Now, Latrice Richardson wasn't declared mentally ill, but she was having a nervous breakdown or something. It was said that she was manic depressive, even though she had just graduated from college. She had a 4.0 grade point average, and she was about to go to grad school. And you look online for Latrice Richardson to find out more information. The police claim they arrested her in a restaurant where she was unable to pay the bill. Even though the truth is, she got her grandmother on the phone, offered to pay her bill by a credit card on the phone, but they wouldn't. They arrested this young, beautiful young girl who was where she was in a closet lesbian. This thing, for as mentally ill or whatever with them, also happens to sexual, gay, lesbian, bisexual and transsexual people. Now, Memphis, where my brother was murdered, I think it was a couple of years later, you may remember reading and hearing about a young woman named, her name was Johnson, well, Deanna Johnson. She's actually a man who had a sex operation and turned into a lady. And so you may have seen the video where they beat her at the intake area of Shelby County Jail. As the story goes, that the officer said, "Hey, she come," and she refused to answer to that. And so the officer left his head, put on some gloves and some brass knuckles, and another officer came and held this person down while this officer beat her on them. And then the nurse came out, and they also pepper sprayed her. That's Deanna Johnson. And the nurse came out after that and ignored this beaten-up inmate on the floor and went and took care of the policeman's hand because he had damaged his hand. He had beat her so much. And so this was all caught on tape in 2008. Now, that happened 2 months after my family was 6 miles, about 6 miles by the government, a federal government vehicle, or other vehicles, waylaid at Chevron Station near my house because they don't like for me to write about all of these secret beatings and abuses and murders online, and they particularly are still hiding my brother. And you can look online for that. That's wrong.
You keep going in and out.
Me for you. I'm sorry?
Mary, you keep going in and out. I can't hear everything you're saying.
Well, of course not. That's COINTELPRO. I am a COINTELPRO's target. They got COINTELPRO agents all around my house, and they point something at the phone just like they do prisoners to keep me from being able to be heard online. I'm sorry about that.
Okay. All right. All right.
I figured that's what it was.
Wow.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes.
Now,
anyway, about this woman that they right after they waylaid me, that happened on September 27th, 2008. We at the station, I called 911. They didn't send out any police officers, but these people got me surrounded at the gas station. Not just myself, but my little 6-year-old grandson. My niece came in another car when I called for help. So all of us are just waylaid at the station, surrounded by government vehicle and 4 other cars. And we called some more family members until we had a caravan of family members because the police in DeKalb County, Georgia, ignored our call for help when they did this. And so a few weeks later, this woman who was going to sue Shelby County Jail, it was Deanna Johnson, she was going to sue the beating she got. Because she was a, what do you call people, the situation? I think that's a trans, the beating that she got in Shelby County Jail. And I was suing Shelby County Jail for the murder of my brother. They stopped us that they somebody got her because she was killed execution style a few weeks after I was accosted, followed, and held up at the Chevron station at the corner of Redan Road and Panola Road right here in Stone Mountain, Georgia, by a federal vehicle leading 4 other cars. And by the way, all these people were black. And so I want you to know that COINTELPRO has not changed. They use black people to mistreat other black people. So I don't want to take up all the time. I just want you to know and pray for me. I was on the, I'm usually on the Reverend Pinckney show on Sundays at 5 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, and I invite everybody to tune in there tomorrow to see if they let me on the air. Last week, when I was going to tell about the situation with Eric Oliver, the young man who was arrested for defending his family against a white mob in Florida, they knew I was going to tell about that because I just heard it on your show the Saturday night before the Sunday, last Sunday. And they didn't want me to publicize that because we have a really vast audience, and so they didn't let anyone call in to Reverend Pinckney's show last Sunday. He had to carry the whole show by himself. You know how last week they wouldn't let Malcolm X's grandson get through on your show.
The calls were blocked. There's no apparent reason why they just couldn't get through.
Yeah, because everybody else was on with us. We got everybody else on. He was the only one we couldn't get on.
I figured something that definitely happens a lot. People don't know about. They actually they can block. They're blocking things like that. That definitely happens.
Oh yes, sir. And the thing is that after I said hello on your show, after that, whenever I tried to speak, I was blocked. So they were blocking Malcolm X's grandson, Malcolm Shabazz, and Mary Neal. They didn't want all of us to be on that show because I'm sure he had some very pertinent things to say, and they're still hiding my brother's murder and things like, I write about things like Thomas Arthur, who's on death row in Alabama. He passed his DNA test in 2009. The judge put his DNA test results under seal by the court, and they plan to go on with his execution anyway, even though they know he's innocent and already have his DNA test results to prove it. So these are the kind of dirty crimes against humanity that I write about online, and that's why they block any shows that I'm on. They block the host. They do this. It's very evil. It's Nazi. A lot of people worry about whether America is becoming communist or not. And I happen to know that we passed communism a long time ago and went to Nazism. The Nazis burned books. And here in America, we have a major problem with internet censorship, which is the equivalent, it's the 21st century equivalent of Nazi book burning. So this is what's going on. I wrote an article to break it down for everybody because there are lots of people who wonder why they didn't get more signatures on their petitions. A lot of people wonder why they can put in dynamite news in their blogs and not get many comments. And so I wrote an article to let you know what's happening and show it to you because I found my COINTELPRO activities as it happens. I have real-time videos proving the cyber-stalking that I endure while I try to type about these people like Catherine Connor, who was wrongfully convicted. Her son, who is facing he's already been wrongfully convicted because the DA said he didn't like her attitude when she got wrongfully convicted and that he was going to arrest her son. So I write about these situations and try to help them get on radio and try to help them get publicity. And it's something that I've been doing for about 6 years. The Jenny Cochran firm deported my family on behalf of Shelby County Jail and the United States Department of Justice. Today, I was delighted to read that the Jenny Cochran firm is now in receivership. That's the office in California. I don't know if it's the whole firm or just the California office. Because one of the attorneys, one of the partners in the L.A. firm, is suing the firm because his partner uses company funds to hire women for sex. And they give them company jobs and their real job, this partner said in his lawsuit, is to have sex with this other partner. And so right now, the Jenny Cochran firm, at least their L.A. office, is in receivership because this partner has been paying to have sex with the staff. And in fact, the other partner claims that he hires women with the intent and purpose of hiring them to get on that desk and hunt with him. And so these are the types of things that I'm about to be hiding. But the Jenny Cochran firm, I want you to know that every attorney who worked with Jenny Cochran in that law firm in L.A. was let go. They were either forced out of the firm or fired right after Jenny Cochran died. Now, Jenny Cochran I wrote an article I want y'all to look at. It's called the Jenny Cochran's COINTELPRO Murder Theory. Because Jenny Cochran announced, you know, after he got O.J. Simpson off, a lot of people were upset about that, about O.J. Simpson going free. Well, that was strike one. Strike two, when he got real famous, he went back and got an earlier client exonerated. And that man's name was Geronimo Jajega Pratt. And he was the Minister of Defense for the Black Panther Party. He had been railroaded into jail 27 years before that for a murder that he did not do, and they knew he didn't do it. And so Jenny Cochran and Attorney Hanlon and a group of other attorneys went back to that case, appealed it once they found out more information about COINTELPRO, and they got Geronimo Pratt out of prison. He had spent 8 years in solitary, wrongly, and the situation is that he was set up for that, like a lot of Black Panther Party members were, and they are now political prisoners, some of them, and some of them got out. Anyway, the third thing Jenny Cochran did bad, B-A-D, in quotes, is that he, in 2002, announced that he was going to sue the United States of America and major corporations like railroad companies and AT&T that use, not AT&T, I'm sorry, I think it's Bell Company, that use leased slaves to string this telephone wire across the nation and to lay the railroad tracks. He was going to collect all the companies that use slaves and also sue the government itself for reparations. He made that announcement in 2002. So Jenny Cochran also carried forth a lot of police murders, like my brother's murder, and took them through to a successful conclusion for the clients. And so he was doing so much that what happened is, some people came to him out of Alabama, and they said, Johnny, you got a big name, and we got big money. Let's get together. So Johnny Cochran got together with these people, and they were Caucasians. And I guess he didn't feel like I know now that they were white supremacists. He got together with them and gave them part ownership of his firm. Well, not long after he did that, he came up dead of brain tumors. And, of course, you know, that might be just lucky for them, or it could be that it was inflicted, because we all know that you can definitely inflict brain tumors in rats. They inflict brain tumors in rats to study how certain drugs will help brain cancer. And so we know it's something that can be inflicted because they do it to lab rats. But in any case, we don't know whether Jenny Cochran was inflicted with something that caused his brain tumors or what. But not long after, he made the announcement about he was suing for reparations. And, of course, he did some pro bono work for the Tulsa riots lawsuit. He came up dead, and now these people have his name. Now, you can listen online to the announcement in an interview by a woman who worked with Jenny Cochran for 17 years. Her name is Shawn Chapman Holly. That's S-H-A-W-N, Chapman, C-H-A-P-M-A-N, dash Holly, H-O-L-L-E-Y. She's the attorney who also, well, right now she works, and most of her work, I believe, is defending the stars in Hollywood. She defended Lisa Lohan when she kept getting in trouble. So you might have seen the pretty little short attorney who would walk in with her. That was Shawn Chapman Holly. Now, Shawn Chapman Holly said that when Jenny Cochran died, these people who he had partnered with walked in and took over his law firm and got rid of her and all the attorneys that used to work with him in that L.A. office, because they had no further use for real civil rights attorneys who were really working the interests of Black people. So this is coming from her. I know it to be true because of what they did to my family, but I want you to get it from one of their own attorneys who worked with them 17 years. So not only are people suing the Cochran firm, but the partners themselves also have to sue them for fraud. Now, they defrauded my family like this. with Larry Neal. I told you to look at Wrongful Death of Larry Neal.com. When my brother was secretly arrested and murdered there in Memphis, Shelby County Jail, and the United States Department of Justice kept the jail to cover up the murder instead of doing something about it. When all that happened, they sent the Johnny Cochran firm at us. Now, if you ever have a death by police or you want to sue a big corporation for something against black people, I urge you to consider another law firm, because their job now seems to be to hold it down in the black community when there's wrongful death or when there's abuse by big companies. They hold it down so that the community won't riot, number one. Number two, they probably are collecting information on the attorney-client privilege and feeding it to the very people you would want to have it. That's number two. And number three, they limit or eliminate payouts for government entities and big corporations when black people have been wronged. They work as your attorneys, but they really got another boss. And so they limit or eliminate your payout from your defendants if it's a civil matter. Now, Johnny Cochran asked him, please don't do any criminal cases. And I can only guess that maybe he was suspicious of them, because according to Sean Chapman Hawley's interview on NPR, she said that the firm was under orders by Johnny Cochran not to do any criminal cases. So maybe he knew that they had relations with private prisons and would railroad the class in jail. That's what I suspect he knew, because I've had calls from people who say that they got terrible defense in their criminal cases. Now, keep in mind that these people are now doing even death row cases. So this is the kind of crooked mess that's going on against African Americans in the 21st century. And yes, I have written the president, and yes, I have written to Attorney General Holder, and yes, I have written to the local officials here in Georgia to complain against my telephone and computer takeovers and the stalkers that follow me around. Yes, I did report the tag numbers for a young man who followed me to the library, because they have some way they can take over computers I use, even at the library or at Kinko's, FedEx Kinko's. I guess they point something, I don't know. Or maybe they find out which computer I'm on and send a message, and they take that over too. But in any case, I report the tag number for this young man who said, I said, why are you following me? And he said, because it pays well. So there I had a confession, and I reported that to the police, and they refused. This is Stone Mountain, Georgia, DeKalb County. They refused to investigate his tag number and get him for stalking. So stalking some people is illegal, and taking emails from Sarah Palin and other white people is illegal. But I was told by DeKalb County police that stealing my emails and interfering with my net freedom is not illegal. I was told that by Detective Miller of DeKalb County Police. So these are just some of the things I go through trying to have net freedom. And, you know, I thank you for this opportunity to speak. I didn't know whether I'd have it or not. I put in online at my free speak blog. That's FreeSpeakBlog. Free Speak Blog. I wrote, I published an article right before coming on the show. It said, A Plea for Free Speech by Larry Neal. We know that Frederick Douglass made that same plea for free speech back in the 1800s when we were officially slaves. But now that it looks like blacks are going back into slavery, and I'm not allowed to talk about these murders and abuses and force against black people, I thought it was time to issue again that plea for free speech. So I hope a lot of people will access your show tonight and also access the link to it and understand that free speech is under attack in America, especially around African-American issues.
Ms. Mary, I have a question. This is Brian Coleman. What about some of the our civil rights leaders, have anything been contacted, and what has been their response to you?
Well, you see, the thing is, sir, that I have found that our civil rights leaders have been, they either lack courage or they lack integrity. As a matter of fact, I was just getting ready Monday to go and file assault charges against Ben Jealous. He attacked me at the Troy Davis rally on September 18, 2011, in Atlanta.
And
I was
Ben Jealous, head of the NAACP, right?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I was trying to give Troy Davis' sister a flyer, and the flyer suggested that I knew she was about to be televised. Her speech was about to go all over America, and she was all over the world, and she was speaking, pleading for her brother's life. This was a few days before he was executed in Georgia. So what I knew is that, see, I'm not a young girl, I'm an old girl. So I remember in the 1960s, we didn't just march to get off the back of the bus. We didn't just march to desegregate. We also boycotted. I feel like if we had just marched and hadn't had that Montgomery boycott, I feel like we'd still be on the back of the bus, because effective protests are not just petitions and marches. They have to impact your opponents financially. If you have a protest and you don't impact anybody financially, you are not going to win. And that's why the citizens of America, be they black, white, or whomever, if you're in the working class, all of your protests don't amount to anything to these people, because you got no financial input. You got no financial protest going. The thing is that back in the day when we protested, we always had a boycott to go along with it. And if you don't, you're not getting anywhere. These people care about money and money only. And so I wanted to tell Troy Davis' sister to please use her time in the limelight to call for a boycott for Troy Davis, and say that if he's that you're going to boycott and not buy any unnecessary products. In other words, you have to have food and gasoline. Other than that, I wanted her to ask America to stop spending until Troy Davis got execution. But as I went to hand her flyer, Ben Jealous gave me a push, and I almost fell down. I stumbled around. I didn't quite hit the ground, and I should have let myself hit the ground. But he wanted to make sure he can get that flyer, or whatever his reason was, because we all know that the NAACP gets most of their funding from corporations, and corporations didn't want that boycott to be heard. Are you there?
Yes.
You're here. Okay,
yes.
Ms. Berry, let me get Catherine to tell her story, if you don't mind. Let me get her to tell her story real quick.
By all means.
Okay.
Thank you. By all means.
Uh-huh, sure. Ms. Catherine?
Yes.
Yes. Go ahead and tell us a little bit about your story.
Well, it's pretty lengthy. Let me see.
Well, look, we got 57 minutes. Come on.
Okay. It's two stories in one. Okay. What happened to me is that during the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, I hired a contractor to do some work on my house.
Yep.
And we entered into a contract together, and I paid him, you know, so much money up front to start, and then he was supposed to get the rest of it once the job was completed. Well, in between, I advanced him some payments. So when I paid him the final payment, I failed to deduct those payments that I had already given him.
Mm-hmm.
And so I overpaid him.
Okay.
And when I realized that I'd overpaid him, he was gone. So I called him up and asked him to return the check. And he refused.
Okay.
So, you know, he was saying that the check was correct. So I just told him, you know, like, if you don't return it, then I'm going to have to stop payment.
Yeah.
Well, he commenced to argue. So I hung up and called my credit union. And so I stopped payment. Okay. So I'm thinking, because he held the check, and I'm thinking, like, he's going to, you know, he's going to return it, and we're going to compromise. Well, he held the check like 3 weeks, and then he was able to turn that check into an electronic item and go into my account and get the money anyway.
Uh-oh.
Yes. So I'm angry then because the check supposed to, you know, it's supposed to have been canceled. And so
yes.
I phoned my credit union and I told them, you know, that what they had done, you know, they hadn't stopped it. So they said they, you know, they apologized to me and told me to come in and do an affidavit and they was going to put the money back into my account. Well, I came in and they gave me the affidavit and I looked at it and I said, well, this says forgery. And I said, it wasn't a forgery. And so the lady took the affidavit and she must have consulted with somebody because she got on the phone and she called. And then she handed the affidavit back to me and said, that was the right one that they used. I said, yes. I said, but this is not a forgery. I said, I overpaid him. She said, yes, Ms. Connor, but this is the form that we used. And so she said, go and take it to your notary and bring it back to us. So I took it to the notary. The notary looked at it, and he says, well, this is not a forgery. I said, no, it isn't. And I said, I told them that, but they said that this is the form that they used. So he phoned them. They told him that was the form that they used. And he was like, you know, like he couldn't believe it, but he says, well, okay. So he signs off on it. I took it back to him. They put the money back into my account. So evidently they went after the contractor.
Uh-huh.
And so then the contractor, after they took the money back from them, the contractor, well, I thought that even with that, I said, well, they didn't put the money back into my account. Maybe we're going to compromise now. And so time went on. So nothing happened. And so I guess about, well, I said, well, maybe they're going to take me to small claims court or something. And so like about 3 months passed by. I was sitting one evening eating dinner with my aunt, and the police came.
Mm-hmm.
And my son brought the policeman in there. At that time, he was about 16. And so I'm thinking, because I had just bought him a little car, I'm thinking this boy done took this car out here and he didn't hit somebody or something, you know. He said, no, Mama, they come for you. And I said, for me? And then they said, well, you Miss Connor? And I said, yes, and we have a warrant for your arrest. I said, for what? And then, well, at that time they said for NSF check for the contractors. I said, it wasn't an NSF check. Well, we have a warrant for your arrest. I said, These people have misinformed you all. So they told me, said, well, we don't have anything to do with that. We have a warrant for your arrest, and we got to bring you in. So they took me on into jail and everything. And I talked to, you know, when, you know how they write you up when you come into jail. And I was telling them that, you know, I hadn't did anything wrong and what had happened to me. And so the jailer told me, he says, well, if the DA calls, we'll let you go. And so some of my family members followed me there, so they said they would go and talk to the DA. So they went to the DA's house, and they told him what had happened. And the DA told them, said he couldn't do anything, but he wouldn't send me to the woman's prison. So I spent the night in jail.
And oh, so, man.
Yes, I spent the night in jail. So, I'm thinking that, you know, I'll just show my paper, you know, from the credit union, just show my paperwork or whatever. I discover the next morning that I'm on a $15,000 bond.
Mm-hmm.
With a check. The check was like $7,500 and some dollars, but I had overpaid this contract by $3,000 and some dollars.
Mm-hmm.
So, but anyway, my mother bond me out and everything.
Mm-hmm.
So I come home and we went for my arraignment and I pled guilty. So I'm thinking it'll be just a matter of me showing my paperwork or whatever, and I'll be free of this.
Uh huh.
Went for my arraignment. The judge wouldn't let the lawyer have the arraignment. And then I'm really getting mad then. So he says, well, he's going to dismiss it, this, that, the other. I'm like, well, I have paid you, though. I have paid you, and you telling me the judge won't. Well, he ran out of the courtroom, the lawyer did. He ran out
what?
Of the court. Yes, he ran out. He was like, you see that judge won't let me have my preliminary hearing, and I'm like, huh? I don't want to hear this, man. I didn't pay you, and you. Well, he's gonna dismiss it, Ms. Connie. He's gonna dismiss it. I'm saying, like, he better. You got my money. So he told me and said in 2 weeks it was gonna be dismissed. Then 2 weeks mm-hmm. happened, then 3 weeks, and then it was months, and I had no idea. That charges in your record, you know, it's so bad. I mean, for you getting a job, I had no idea till this happened
mm-hmm.
to me. Because before I had never, I didn't have a criminal record. I didn't even had never had a traffic ticket, and I was like 52 years old, and so
mm-hmm.
all this is just foreign to me, you know, like, and so, but anyway, I had got turned down for. At least 2 jobs during that time because these charges was in my record.
Mm-hmm.
And still nothing had happened as he had said it was going to be dismissed. So I filed a complaint against the DA and the judge. And what did I do that for? I went back into court, I think, because scheduled for a trial like 7 months later.
Mm-hmm.
And so I
Were
went
you incarcerated
back.
All this time?
No, no.
Okay.
No. I was scheduled for trial. And then it was something that I went into court for. I can't remember exactly what it was, or it was a postponement or something. But anyway, the DA got in my face, and he was like, Catherine Connor, where is Catherine Connor? Now, he's like about 8 inches from my face, so he knows this is me. You sit here, he says. You sit here. The lawyer wouldn't even look at me. He was afraid
mm-hmm.
to look. No, he wouldn't even look at me. And he's saying, like, you sit here. And so my mother and one of my friends, they just looked at me like, just sit down. Don't pay him any attention. And then he told the bailiff, he says, when you take the male prisoners back, send a female back for her. Trying to provoke me. So I sit
yeah.
there. And anyway, I know what it was. I was late. I was like 20 minutes late. And he was trying to get the contempt. But anyway, it didn't work. So they scheduled me for trial later. And that's when I told the lawyer that I wanted him to be recused from my case.
Uh-huh.
And so the lawyer, he motioned to recuse him but wouldn't say why. And I was telling him, well, it's not going to do any good if you don't give a reason why. This man has it in for me. And, he provoked me in front of you. But he wouldn't put that. He just said that Ms. Connor feels that the DA is biased toward her. So
mm-hmm.
it didn't go anywhere.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I was maliciously convicted. And I was remanded back to jail on a $25,000 bond.
Man.
Yes, on a $25,000 bond. And what made it so obvious that they had it in for me.
You're saying that they convict you when you finally had your, was it a pretrial hearing?
We didn't never have a pretrial hearing.
And you're saying that you were sent back, you were convicted, but they, you had a bond? I'm trying to understand how you have a bond if you were convicted.
I was convicted, and I was placed on a $25,000 bond.
Oh, that's before they sentence you?
Yes.
Okay. I'm following that. Okay.
I was told that he didn't have to do that. He just did that to be low down. He didn't have to do that.
Right.
What made it so obvious that he had it in for me? Now, when I was on a $15,000 bond, he dismissed my bond obligation. He dismissed it, and after I was convicted, it was almost like he picked it back up again and then raised it higher. But anyway,
where did this take place?
This is in East Feliciana Parish, Louisiana.
And that's close to what major city?
Clinton, Louisiana. That's in Clinton, Louisiana, as a matter of fact.
Close to New Orleans?
No. It's more closer to Baton Rouge.
Oh, it's close. Okay. But it's in between New Orleans and Baton Rouge? It's on the east side.
It's on the east side.
Okay.
Anyway, a friend of mine bonded me out.
Mm-hmm.
And so I went in for my pre-sentence investigation. The probation officer, he asked me, he said, "Ms. Connor," he said, "what did you steal?" And I said, "Nothing." He said, "because I'm trying to figure out what you stole." He said, "I can't see anything that you stole. I don't understand this." I said, "well, basically because these people made a mistake and arrested me." And I said, "then I wrote them up." He said, "I thought it was something because I don't see anything that you stole." And he says, "in the record it says it's a misdemeanor. Now, how did it get to be a felony?" I said, "I don't know." He said, This is not even a criminal matter. This is a civil matter. This is a dispute over contract." And he says, "from what I see, you was the victim." I said, "yes." So he says, I don't understand this." He said, I just don't understand it. I just can't understand it." So he got all my information, and he phoned my credit union. I guess he contacted them, and they told him this basically the same thing they had told me, because they had written me a letter of apology for everything that happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they told him, "I'm gonna read to you what they said." He said, "we also contacted the Pelican State Credit Union of Baton Rouge, Louisiana, and specifically Ms. Stephanie Cartwright. Ms. Cartwright indicated Pelican State Credit Union did not sustain any financial loss as a result of the instant offense. Ms. Cartwright further informed our office that their credit union member, Ms. Catherine Connor, did not make any criminal allegations against the Jefferson. She requested a stop payment on a check she had written to Mr. Ralph Jefferson. Ms. Cartwright stated Ms. Connor told us that Mr. Jefferson had apparently done some home repairs for her. She wrote him a check of $7,574. She requested a stop payment because she had already paid him. We stopped payment on the check. After that, Mr. Jefferson physically presented the check at the credit union. We did not honor this check because we had stopped payment on the check. Mr. Jefferson then went to some other institution and through some electronic means accessed the credit union's accounts and was able to deposit this check into his own bank account. That's illegal. Ms. Catherine Connor initially talked to me, but when she came into the credit union to sign the stop payment forms, we inadvertently had her sign the wrong forms, and we had her sign the affidavit of forgery forms. in error. We should have had her sign the written penalty under perjury forms. We made a mistake, and we did Ms. Connor wrong. She did not tell us that Mr. Jefferson stole or forged any of her checks. And he gave this report to the judge, and the judge sealed it. The judge.
Now, who was the judge?
Judge George H. Ware, Jr.
So judge sealed it and used it and made it, what, inadmissible? He wouldn't admit it to, in the court records?
He sealed it. He, in other words, it was in the court records, but not
but
for
it cannot
any,
be used.
That's
but
right.
It couldn't be used.
That's yeah, right. he made it inadmissible.
Right.
Yeah, inadmissible, yeah.
And,
wow.
Now, what was that judge named George, what, H, what?
Ware, W-A-R-E, Jr. Matter of fact, he's my neighbor.
Oh, my God.
George H. Ware, Jr.?
Ware, W-A-R-E, W-A-R-E, Ware.
And he's your neighbor?
Yes.
He's your neighbor.
He should have recused himself from the case.
Huh?
He should have recused himself from the case.
Yes.
He was just being your neighbor.
Yes.
Well,
he should have never even heard your case.
And you want to know something else? Judge Judy was going to hear my case. Judge Judy was going to hear this case had the other party agreed. But because they convicted me, she couldn't hear it. She couldn't hear it.
Man,
but
so they didn't want her to hear it is what happened.
No. They didn't know anything about her. I didn't tell them.
Oh, okay.
I just told them that I couldn't proceed in the civil court. I didn't tell them what civil
excuse
court.
Excuse me. They knew about it because they are listening in on your phone.
Huh?
I said they probably knew about it because they tapped your phone. When people get ready to railroad you in court, they usually put a tap on your phone to know whether communicating about them. Go ahead.
Man.
I don't know, but anyway, so when I went for he was going to send me to the women's prison, with the lawyer that I had. He was going to sentence me in 2 weeks, and he was going to send me to 3 years hard labor in the women's prison.
Wow.
And that's right. And so what I did was dismiss the lawyer that I had.
Mm-hmm.
And my mother helped to pay for another lawyer for me.
Mm-hmm.
And the other lawyer was saying, he says, well, Ms. Connor, I don't know. He says, didn't they tell you that if you was convicted, you would be sentenced to a woman's prison? And I said, no. He said, well, what did they tell you? I told him what the lawyer told me was that I would have so much time, so much, you know, community service, restitution, as a bunch of stuff. And
mm-hmm.
But it wasn't the woman's prison. So he
mm-hmm.
says, oh, yeah, they told him the woman's prison. And he said, I don't know what I can do about this. But that is what they're saying.
Mm-hmm.
So he filed a motion for a new trial
mm-hmm.
Based on the fact that he was saying that the conviction was against Louisiana law. It was contrary to Louisiana law.
Mm-hmm.
And also, if I couldn't get that, then he was wanting me to be acquitted. The judge said no. So I went for my sentencing. He suspended the 3 years hard labor to 3 years probation. I think it was like $15,000 in some restitution, including court fees and jail fees.
Restitution to who?
To the contractor.
$15,000?
Oh, my God.
Yes, $15,000.
Oh,
15,
my
000,
God.
$15,500, and it's outrageous.
Oh, my God.
And really, the contractor never did finish my home. He didn't supply all the building materials. I didn't discover this till later. And that's why, another reason why he didn't want to bring the money back. He had did all this, and I, you know, because he had left this, he had left some things, and he had put this big tarp over them. And I didn't check to find out, well, he had hired a subcontractor. And when the subcontractors began to start working, then that's when we discovered a lot of the stuff wasn't even there. But anyway, what I should have owed him was about $3,500 and something. But the court had it in for me, and it was like $15,000 and some dollars.
Was this a white contractor?
No, he was black.
Black contractor. And judge was black or white?
White. Anyway, the lawyer told me, said the judge said if I didn't appeal, he wouldn't send me to the woman's prison. And I said, well, he can go ahead and send me then because that's my right. And then he just gave me all this outrageous fee with, you know, just this harsh sentence.
Mm-hmm.
So I, the lawyer that I had only appeared for my sentence. I tried to get him to appeal my case, but then he didn't want to be bothered with the court either. I called him, you know, afterwards to see would he do the appeal for me. He wouldn't even answer his phone. So I ended up, I was going to appeal myself. And it was something that this judge did to, he told the appeals court that I had fired my lawyer on appeal. No, I had fired my lawyer. I had fired my lawyer on appeal. And the court said that they didn't see where I had fired a lawyer. In other words, he was saying that the second lawyer that I hired, he was the same lawyer that I had for my trial, and he wasn't.
Mm-hmm.
And so the appeals court caught that and ordered this judge to have a hearing with me to see if I wanted to proceed on my own with my appeal, and if I didn't, that they would have to appoint me a state attorney from the appellant project. And I went to my my hearing with this judge, anticipating that it was going to be some trickery. So I wrote this letter to myself. I wrote a certified letter to myself saying that if it was any trickery or any, you know, if I'm locked up again or whatever, this letter would serve to prove, you know, that I had already anticipated this, that I was going for my hearing and I was going to ask for a court-appointed attorney. I was not going to proceed on my own. So if the court said that I refused and wanted to proceed on my own, they would be lying. So I went to my hearing. The judge told me that the appellate project don't do anything. I said, that's okay. I still want an appointed attorney.
Mm-hmm.
And so he said, so it is ordered. Ms. Connell will be appointed an attorney from the Louisiana Appellate Project. And he told the appeals court that I said that I was going to proceed on my own.
What?
Yes, he did. They wrote me a letter and told me I can start on my brief. Said I have my brief here the next week. And
Yeah,
and I'm like, what? And they said, and I called them, and they said, well, Ms. Connor, you told the court you wanted to proceed on your own. I said, well, it was a man that I talked to. I said, sir, only a fool would proceed on their own. I said, I don't have no expertise in law. So they said, and I said, but I anticipated this. I said, so that's why I wrote this certified letter to myself. He says, what? I said, yes, I wrote a certified letter to myself because I figured something like this was going to happen. And he said, well, put that certified letter in a motion to us. And I did. And then they appointed me an attorney.
God.
That is ridiculous.
The attorney, she was good, and I mean, she really put up a good defense for me. She really did, and she told them that you know, that it was a civil matter being tried as a crime, and that the contractor wasn't licensed or bonded. To work here in Louisiana.
Mm-hmm.
The appeals court turned me down. He had people. The appeals court turned me down. They didn't say anything about him being unlicensed. Nothing. The appeals court turned me down. So we appealed to the Supreme Court. The Supreme Court wouldn't hear it. So the decision of the appeals court was that I pay restitution based on my income. So whatever, I mean, the Supreme Court didn't hear it, so the appeals court decision had to stand. They said that the judge is supposed to have a hearing with me and determine my earnings. And base my restitution on those earnings.
So they upheld the criminal part of it?
Oh, yes. I'm telling you, he had people.
Golly.
He had people. This is Louisiana. He had people. The lawyer that I had, she was just like, Miss Connor, I don't know what to say. I've never seen anything like this in my life. But he had people. But anyway, they told him to have a hearing with me to determine what I should pay. He didn't have a hearing with me, and the probation officer say, I do what the judge say do, and the judge wants you to pay this.
What?
My net, $558. The judge got me paying $388. That's right. That's right. And so if I could hire a lawyer, that way I couldn't hire one. I couldn't hire him. Now, here, the last 2 months, it's just a blessing from God. I don't know what happened. I don't know when I had to take an early retirement behind all this. Because prior to this, I lost my job back in 2000 as a recreation specialist. And I was injured on the job. That was messed up, too. But anyway, it had been in court. It has been in court ever since up until all this happened to me. Mm-hmm. And so therefore, I had to go ahead on and retire to try to have some kind of income to pay this restitution.
Mm-hmm.
They ordered restitution when you had no income.
Huh?
They ordered restitution when you had no income.
No. They ordered the restitution after I guess I had exhausted all my my options to appeal.
Mm-hmm.
But did you have an income coming at the time?
Yes, I had income.
Okay, that was the $500-some-odd.
No.
Okay.
No. It wasn't my income. It was my son's income. I worked odd jobs between with his income because he was getting survivor benefits from his father.
Okay.
But as he got of age, the little money that I was getting from, like, the odd job that I had, it wasn't going to be enough. So I had to go ahead on.
The income that you had wasn't really your income.
No.
It being paid to you to take care of your son because his father.
Right. Mm-hmm. But no, I had a job as a sitter. But it was like whenever they need you.
Right, right.
It wouldn't be like a job like one of the jobs like teacher's assistant, and it was another job. The teacher's assistant and I can't think of what the job was.
But you did have some income coming in.
Yeah, it would have been a permanent job. Those would have been permanent jobs, but the one that the sitting job was just whenever they needed somebody.
Uh-huh.
And so therefore that wouldn't have been reliable. You know what I'm saying?
So he based $300-something a month on a on call job.
Yeah. Yeah. So I went head on and took the early retirement. But anyway, back to paying the $388 a month, up until, I guess, about 2 months or so, I got
mm-hmm.
a raise. I got
mm-hmm.
a raise. So now I get like, I net $798. But it's still rough. It's still rough. That's almost, It's really half.
About half your income.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I had tried to get, you know, a lawyer to, like, do a post-conviction relief for me. But
mm-hmm.
looked like every time I'd try to put a little back if I could, I had to use it for something else. Because my mother was trying to help me, too, but, you know, it's just like you're stuck.
Now, this so judge, is he in an elected position?
Yes.
Hmm.
But he got another year to retire. And this is a rural place that I live in. It's the rural parish, and they pretty much do what they want. And it's like pulling our teeth to get, I hate to say it, to get black people to come together on these issues. I mean,
You know what? You're not just talking. I think that's Louisiana wide. I don't think it's just where you're at. We can agree with that. We're here in Rapides Parish, so we know it's
crazy.
But anyway, Mary and there's many others on Facebook. And other social networks have been writing on my behalf and also on my son. That's another story. Next month, he's supposed to be, he's been convicted too. Hello?
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah,
somebody's bleeding through.
I can't hear.
Phone on mute.
Huh?
Somebody might need to put their phone on mute. I can hear the noise coming through.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm going out.
Huh?
Okay, go ahead. Ms. Connor, go ahead.
About 6 months after I was arrested, my 17-year-old son was accused by a senior educator, excuse me, at his school of indecent exposure. She claimed that she saw him walking on a hall behind her with his private parts exposed.
Okay. Wait a minute. She said he was walking behind her. So how did she see him? She had a mirror on the back?
No. She said she turned around and she saw him exposed, and she said to him, "Did I see your private parts?" And he said, "No, ma'am." And he continued to walk on. And she said to him, he said that she said, "I believe I did." And he said, "No, you didn't." But she says he turned around and come back and apologized to her, but he tells a different story. But anyway, she called my, well, when I picked him up and I asked him how was his day, like I normally ask him. And he said, well, not so good. And I asked him, what was the matter? He says, well, he told me that the teacher was tripping. He said, I don't know what was the matter with her today, Mom. And I said, well, what are you talking about? He said, I don't want to talk about it right now. He said, I'm just too upset. I don't want to talk about it. So all the weekend, he was quiet because he's normally playful and all like that. He was like, and I was saying, like, Matthew, what is the matter? He said, I can't talk about it right now. So Tuesday came because he don't work on Monday. This was like during the summer. He worked during the summer, and this is what really got me with this, with what she was saying, because he'd been working at the school ever since he was 15 during the summer, and each time he has to take a class, you know, on workforce development and how to conduct himself in the workforce and all that. And but anyway, so she called me that Tuesday morning and told me she wanted to have a meeting with me. She asked me, did he tell me anything? And I told her, no. I said, no, not really. And she said, well, she wanted to have a meeting. I said, well, what was it about? She said, well, I'd rather talk to you in person. So then that's when I asked him. I said, Ms. Anderson, I just got off the phone with Ms. Anderson, and I said, now, what is going on? And that's when he told me the full story, that she had accused him of seeing his private parts. And he said, Mama, he said, that woman ain't seen my private parts. And he said, I couldn't tell her. He said, she ain't the kind of person that you just say no to, because it's going to be her way or else. And so I said, well, okay, we'll see what's happening. So we rode over to the school, and then that's when she told me about, said she saw him on the hall, and when she turned around, she saw his private part sticking over his shorts. And I said, and she said, well, he was on hard. I said, what are you saying? What do you mean? So she couldn't say anything, but she had to, the principal of the school in there, I guess, as a witness. So he says, well, she means he had an erection. She said, yes, he had an erection. I said, and what? What are you saying? She was quiet. Then she says, I kept saying, well, what are you saying? And then she says, well, his genitalia was over his waistband. And my son was like, what is this woman talking about? He was like shaking his head and stretching his eyes. And so I said, over his waistband? She says, yeah. She said she was walking on the hall. And when she turned around, she saw him this way. And she asked him, did she see his private parts? I said, well, then, Miss Anderson, are you saying, did you see his private parts? You're looking at her. She couldn't say anything. I said, well, how long did you... No, she said, he was on every hall. I said, you watched him on every hall? She said, yes. I watched him for a long time. He was on every hall. And I said, you didn't say anything to him? She said, yes. I asked him if he was modeling for me. And I said, oh, no. I said, that's what she told me. That's what she told me, y'all. And I told...
Can I ask a question?
Uh-huh.
Okay. Now, the school that he's in, they didn't have cameras in the hallway?
I'm about to get to that. Yes, they do.
Okay.
So she said,
all right.
She said she watched him for a long time, and I said, you didn't say anything to him? She said, yes. She asked if he was modeling for her. And I told her that was an inappropriate statement for somebody you claim is exposed. And she says, well, I'm going to recommend that he be moved to another work site. I said, well, I tell you, let me see. Y'all got cameras in here. Let me see your cameras. Let me see what's on your cameras. I said, because what I can't understand, you saying you saw all this and everything. And I said, then what she had told me, she said, then she went on the outside, and then she asked him about when was I coming and when is your ride coming? Why so late? And I said, Now, you done seen all this, and then you tell him he can leave. He leaves and go on the outside, obviously, and wait for me, and then you come out there. And I said, you got cameras. Let me see your cameras. She looked at the principal, and he looked at her. They wouldn't say nothing. And she said, well, so the principal says, well, the police need to be notified. She shouldn't have to look at him. And I said, well, what do you mean? What do you mean? Well, he should be put out to district. And I said, oh, yeah? And I said, you'll find one to talk. I said, you have assaulted two students. So he didn't say nothing else.
He doesn't have what now?
He had assaulted two students.
Okay.
So anyway, so I told my son, so let's go. So we left. And so I called the superintendent. And I told the superintendent, I said, I don't know what's going on with Miss Anderson. I said, but I believe Miss Anderson is a predator. I said, my son have never, ever did anything remotely close to what she's saying. And I said, I know y'all got cameras in this school because I see them. And I said, I asked them about the cameras. Nobody will talk. And I said to him, I said, well, and I asked her, why did she follow him outside? I said, she couldn't answer me. I asked her, why did it take her like 4 days for her to even say anything about this? His supervisor was in the building. Other people were in the building. She didn't tell anybody. Police within a mile away. She says, when I asked her about this, she said, well, I called you. I said, yeah, but I'm like 11, 12 miles away. All these people are right here. She couldn't say anything. So the superintendent told me, he said, well, I'd like to know that myself. So obviously he called her because she called me back, and she was mad as a hatter. And she says, well, I'm pressing charges.
Now she's going to try to cover her butt now.
Yeah, I'm pressing charges. And my brother told me before I called the superintendent, I had told family members, and my brother said, you need to report that. You need to report that to the police. And she pressed charges of what? She beat me to the draw. And she pressed charges on my son. They tried to keep him out of the school. They fired him from his summer job. Broke his heart. He come back to school from summer break. They turned him away. And what they told me then is that he couldn't come back until he get okay from the DA's office and the superintendent. So I called the Louisiana Board of Education and told them what had happened. And the man there told me, Mr. Hitchcock told me, that they could not keep him from attending his school. He wasn't expelled. He wasn't convicted of nothing. And he wasn't a student at the time she claimed this happened. And it was no evidence that he did anything. And he said if they tried to keep him from attending that school, to file a civil suit on him.
Mm-hmm.
I called the superintendent and told him what Mr. Hitchcock told me. He says, well, it's not me that don't want him back. It's the principal, but he can go on back. So Matthew went back to his school, August the 7th, 2009. Okay, prior to that, I had to turn him in because this woman pressed charges on him. He was put on a $10,000 bond. That's right. And I had turned him in. Okay. And so he was due for an arraignment that Monday.
That is when he had to put on $10,000 bond, was he in school at the time?
No. No.
Okay.
Okay. And so but he was in school. It was time for, I mean, you know, school had started when it was time for his arraignment.
Right, that's what I'm asking.
Yeah, yeah.
So this interrupted in his school.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, anyway, I I, you know, took him for his arraignment. Went for his arraignment, the DA told me, he said, another teacher didn't file a charge against your son. I said, another teacher? He says, yes. Yeah, he says, yes.
Wow.
And, he says, yes. But it can go away. He said, her statement will go away. If you get some counseling for him, you get counseling for him and put him in a neighboring school. And I said, counseling for him? I said, that'll be in his record. Well, he was like, well, you take it or leave it. Yeah, you take it or leave it. I said, no, no. I said, he says, and I said, let me see the statement. So I looked at the statement and I said, this doesn't have a date. And I said, this ain't nothing but politics. I said, now this is dated the same day he came back to school, which was Friday, August the 7th. I said, she claiming she saw him in June, but she just making her statement August the 7th?
Mm-hmm.
And she says, you know, in her statement, one day in June, she saw him, she solicited his help. And she saw his entire penis hanging over the front of a box. Yeah, over the front. She saw it, but she didn't say nothing at the time because she thought his pants had just fallen away. But later on, he came into the teacher's lounge, and this time his pants was even lower. And again, his penis was showing, and that's when she said, Matthew Moore, you know you're exposing yourself. You get your things up right away. Matthew said he don't even know her. She's
Man.
A white lady. Both of them senior citizens, and you know, it just didn't add up. But anyway, I told him, I said, well, that's politics. I said, that's East Feliciana politics. And I said, I don't want to hear that, and so I left. And my mother said I slammed the door, but I don't know. I just got angry, and I left. So he came out there, and he said, you see with your attitude? I'll lock him up again, and the next time he'll stay in jail because I had to turn him
what?
In. Yeah, that's what he told me. And see, he already had it in for me anyway because he had falsely arrested me. So anyway, both of them turned around and got restraining orders. They're trying to keep him out of the school. Got restraining orders. So the judge said that he could return to his school. So Matthew returned to his school the next day. Miss Anderson saw him in the classroom and assumed he shouldn't be there because she thought she had a restraining order. She calls the police. The police come and sees him and take him out of the school. Took him to the police station. Well, he calls me and he said, Mother, I'm in the police station. The police removed me from the school. He said, I told him that the judge said I could go back to school, but they said, Miss Anderson said that I'm not supposed to be there. So my cousin and I went to the police station, and we told him that the judge said that he could return to his school. So with much reluctance, they called the judge, Judge Carmichael. And the judge told him, yes, he told him he could go to his school just to stay away from the teachers, like he was actually trying to bother them or something. These are senior citizens. Anyway, the policeman told me, well, the judge has spoken. He can go back. And then he says, wait a minute. I need to call the judge. I said, you just got off the phone with the judge. Yeah, I need to talk to him again. But he got on the phone with the DA. And I hear him on the other phone. He's like, uh-huh, yeah, uh-huh, all right then, okay. Then he gets off the phone and said, Ms. Cohn, I got some bad news for you. I said, what's that? We're going to have to put him back under arrest again. We're going to have to hold him for 72 hours. Yeah, we're going to have to put him on a 72-hour hold. I said, 72-hour hold for nothing. For what? Oh, for the other teacher. I said, no. I said, the judge ruled on all that yesterday. The second teacher, I said, he put her complaint under the same bond he was already on. But we're going to have to hold him for 72 hours. took my son and put him back in jail. 72 hours turned to 5 days. I had to post a $40,000 bond.
Oh my God.
Yes.
Oh my God. That's
a $40,000 bond to get him out of jail.
Ooh.
So by this time, I'm having to go get to hire a lawyer. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So the lawyer writes the judge, and he wanted to be clear on what he had said in court, if he said whether he could go back to his school. The judge don't answer the letter.
Now D ain't got to the judge.
Yeah, the judge didn't answer the letter as to say, well, yeah, I told them they could go back. He said, Ms. Connor wants to be clear because she don't want that the same thing to happen. So the superintendent had the truancy officer to call me and said, we're sorry about what happened in Matthew. That wasn't supposed to happen. He can go back to his school. I said, are you sure this time? He said, yes. Matthew went back to his school and finished his school, but he still had two counts a felony obscenity against him.
Oh, man.
I have had four lawyers on his case. None of them would present the evidence that I have, that at least whatever they're saying is their word against his, but I have compelling evidence that these people conspired against my son, and they wouldn't bring the evidence.
Wow.
My son is 20 years old. He was convicted April the 21st of two counts of attempted obscenity with just their word alone. And I thought that, the lawyer that we had, the lawyer that we had, he just did a dance with him. He wouldn't even attack the teacher's credibility, the second teacher. Had bipolar disorder and was taking counseling at her own school for lying. Matter of fact, the superintendent told her if she didn't get counseling for herself, he was going to fire her. So she was taking counseling at her own school. Both of them got on the stand and said, we don't want to be here. We didn't want to be here. And I'm like, why the hell are you here then? This boy is 20 years old. What you here for? We didn't want to be here. If she'd have just got counseling for him, we wouldn't be here. And I'm like, this child is 17 years old. He's 20 now. He went back to his school and he finished. Why are you here? Did he touch you? Did he even say anything suggestive to you? And I never could see the cameras. My son is
see, that should have been something one of the lawyers should have asked for right off the bat.
They asked for the video, and they said that each one of them told me they had nothing, but he was still convicted. They didn't have anything. The first educator, I found out she had sexually harassed at least one other child. The mother is a librarian. And she told me she sexually harassed her son, and she went to the school board about it. Said, but they didn't do anything. Nothing. This DA he protects the school board at any cost. We had another case here where a bus driver had kissed two 13-year-old girls and had sex with one of them. Had sex with the third one, and they seemed to think he gave her a venereal disease. But the DA was trying to cut him some slack because he worked for the school board, and he was a part-time policeman and a part-time, you know, with the fire department or whatever. But anyway, he was connected to the court and the school board. And some of her relatives, one of her relatives from California or something, but anyway, they wrote an article in the paper about it and saying they didn't understand if he's supposed to be representing the victim or the victimizer. They couldn't tell.
Wow. This is...
Yeah, it's very corrupt, and... There was an attorney that brought marijuana into Angola prison. as some of you all might have seen, is this a public defender brought marijuana into Angola prison.
Mm-hmm.
And even the paper said it should have been a felony. This DA.
Yeah.
Huh?
Yeah,
it should have been.
This DA bust this down to a misdemeanor. This man ain't never stopped practicing law.
Wow.
And this was in March, but he would nail me and my son to the cross.
Oh, the same DA?
Same DA, yes.
Wait a minute, you the same DA?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
In one of these cases, I'm talking about the same DA, and I ain't talking about, like.
West Feliciana, that's over there by Angola?
That's West Feliciana. He's the DA for West Feliciana and East Feliciana.
Okay, I know exactly where you're at now.
Okay.
Okay, that's right over there.
Oh, my God.
Too far from us, Alita.
I know.
Seven people got killed here last month. You might have read about the seven car crash, seven people dying in a car crash. Five.
I think
died
I did
instant.
Hear about that, something about.
Same DA. Now, this man that killed those people had been convicted of DWI at least one time, and then the other time he was stopped in his parish, and they suspected that he was drinking, say, but he refused the breathalyzer test, the authority to bring him in, but the DA let him go. So this time he kills these seven people.
Oh my God!
He kills people instant. Okay, he made bail less than 48 hours on a $256,000 bond for five people. But a friend of mine's son was like trespassed on somebody's property was $185,000.
Wow.
Okay.
Man.
This man made bail, okay? The sixth person died, and so they rearrested him. So they held him in jail, but no bond until the seventh one died because they knew the other one was in critical condition. When he died, then they gave him, they put him on $1 million bond for seven people. So the day that my son is supposed to be sentenced, August the 14th, is the same day that this man is supposed to be in court again.
Now, wait a minute now. Now, is he locked up right now or is he out on bail?
He's locked up right now so far as I know.
So your son is still in the system?
Yes. They convicted my son April the 21st for this mess that...
From 2009.
From 2009.
Oh, man.
They
are. Wait a minute. Okay, so what? Okay. Well, what are they charging him with? What is the whole crime?
Felony obscenity. Obscenity.
And what does that carry? What does that carry?
I don't know. Well, what it was, the DA said, if he take a felony on one of them, he won't try him on both. And I said no. My son didn't do this. He wanted to go to trial. So when he went to trial, he tried him on both of them. And I think the other one was attempted obscenity. Attempted obscenity.
Oh, Lord Jesus.
Both of them felonies.
Obscenity.
Yeah, you see.
You either do it or you don't do it.
Yeah, you see. But you see,
that's not like attempted murder. You can try and not succeed, but attempted obscenity. I'm upset. Oh wow!
I've never heard of that before.
Me neither.
He attempted to do it, and he did. He changed his mind.
To go unzip my pants, but I didn't. So if I didn't unzip them, I didn't do it.
Well,
oh
I guess it's attempted, and it didn't go off the way he wanted it to go off.
Okay.
I don't know, but that was a. He says at first, if you take the attempted obscenity, in other words, we won't try you on obscenity if you take the attempted obscenity. My son says, no, I didn't do that. And, you know, I take my chances. So after he was convicted, I just made sure that any juror would have looked at it at least and said, even though the lawyer did not attack these teachers' credibility, he didn't use none of the compelling evidence that I have. Even the documentation of these policemen that fabricated probable cause. I mean, that's malfeasance. When you fabricate a document, if the statement is different from what the victim gave, and then you alter it to try to bump some up to make it more dramatic than what it is.
Miss Connor, are these attorneys from your parish?
One was.
And the other one was not from the parish? And still didn't do anything?
They didn't do, and I mean, I was paying like, the first one was like $1,200, but she didn't take the full $1,200. The second one was $2,000. The third one was $5,000. The fourth one was $8,000. This is the one I'm paying now.
Wow.
Oh, my God. So what's the one that you're paying now? What are they doing?
Nothing. He didn't do nothing. I told him that this woman had bipolar disorder, and was up in court with a tablet in her hand, jotting down notes from the other teacher. Took the tablet up on the stand.
Took the tablet on the stand?
Took it up on the stand, and the judge asked her for it.
Oh!
That's right. We weren't even supposed to be in. They weren't even supposed to be in the same room. They were supposed to be calling me in at one time. The lawyer didn't do that. It was all planned. It was all planned.
Oh,
because he knew that she was lying. So he let her feed off the other teacher. That's right. And you could tell that she had something going on with her because she was like very nervous. She had a card on her hand. She'd take it off that hand, put it on the other hand, and she'd put it around her neck. She just couldn't be still.
What's her name?
Huh?
What's her name? What is her name?
Her name is Paige Fleming Guillory. She's married since that happened. This the one that I told you about has bipolar disorder.
Okay, now what's the other one? You said another one accused them too?
Yes, Deborah Collins Anderson, and she kept saying, "Oh, well, we wouldn't be here if you had got counseling for him." And I'm like, "Oh, so it ain't about him; it's about me." You know, because if a child, if his child is under your guardianship, he does what you tell him to do. So both of them says, "Well, we wouldn't be here. We didn't want to be here. We didn't want to be here, but she wouldn't get counseling for him."
So they didn't even ask for character witnesses about him or anything other than you?
I brought character witnesses, but the lawyer wouldn't call him. I even brought his minister.
Oh, he was
in
on it.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, he wouldn't even call him. They wouldn't even call him. They called one character witness that I brought and myself. I had his supervisor, his former supervisor, when he was working at the school. I had his minister, even my brother, because my brother had to go over to the school for her because she said that her son said that my nephew was staring at her funny.
Oh,
he was staring at her in an intimidating way. And, another, well, they let the other lady that I talked, that we had talk, which, I mean, the other character witness, she talked and told them that this lady was very vindictive and that she lies to get her way. And she told them about how she did her daughter and how she picked at her daughter. She didn't want her daughter in the office with her. You know, like students work in and out of the office with, you know, she didn't want her in there. And she felt like she was always picking at her daughter because her, in other words, in some ways, she was kind of jealous of the girl because of her you know, she was one of I guess you would say a high achiever.
Right.
A person
right.
that made good grades, and sometimes, you know, like, well, I guess depending on a person's mindset, they might be intimidated or jealous of a student. And then she would always say that the girl's clothes were too tight. It would always be something about her. And
what if she don't buy her clothes?
Well,
crazy.
Well, this is what she said, and her mother said she just told her she got a problem with her daughter. She had a problem with her, and she said, I got my daughter out of there. Because I was always coming over to the school. It was her pants were too tight. Her blouse was too revealing. It was always some of a sexual nature. And it said it just wasn't happening. It's the only thing I could see that she was jealous of my daughter. And the same thing with my nephew. She was saying, like, he was looking at her in an intimidating way. So my brother wanted to know, well, what kind of look is that? Well, he just looks at me like he might would harm me. He said, woman, you are crazy. But anyway, the DA protects the school board, bottom line. So my son...
Let me ask you a question. Is the DA the legal representation for the school board? I know that the
yes,
DA
is
the
yes,
legal
is,
representation.
Yes, he is, and I tried to get him recused, but they wouldn't recuse him.
No, I'm saying, but does he, like, when they have school board meetings, is the DA the person that is a legal advisor?
Yes.
Oh, come on. Well.
Yes.
See, here, it's the same thing here. So,
yes.
Of course he's going to protect him, because they pay him extra. He gets paid extra for that.
Yes.
Oh.
Yes, he's a legal advisor. I got the newspaper clipping, too, where he's a legal advisor to the school board.
Oh.
I just got another clipping where I think this was Allen Parish. About 2 weeks ago, the district attorney there stepped away from a case because it involved one of his school board members and something that he had did at the casino, but he couldn't prosecute him, and he was a legal advisor too to the school board, so he stepped away from it.
Right. The same thing here in Rapids Parish. The DA is a legal advisor for the parish. So if anything had come against the parish for the DA to be involved, it seemed like he would recuse himself from it because conflict of interest, because he represents them anyway, and
yeah.
I would think the same thing in that case, but wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
He refused to step away from it because he'd have been defeating his purpose. He's guiding it. He was guiding it. And he conspired with the judge and also the policeman to rearrest my son. And I have them on tape conspiring against them, but I couldn't get the lawyer to present it.
Wow.
That is, oh, man, that is crazy.
So
yeah,
this is the legal system that we have that's supposedly working in our behalf.
That's right.
Oh, my God.
They set up to take us down, as we already knew, but you're seeing it firsthand. And
neither
if there's
one
any good
of us
come out of this, is sharing with us the low down, evil, dirty trick.
That's right.
Play
That's
with
right.
people's lives.
That's right. And when my son was convicted, he stood up and started shaking people's hands, and he reached for my aunt, and she turned her back. This is a sick man. He's sick and he's criminal. But really, this whole outfit is. And I'll say it, and I hope everybody's listening. I hope the right people is listening to this. We went to the FBI. Me and another lady having
okay.
similar problems. We went to the FBI. You know what they told us? Bring your minister or get a lawyer to come. Now, we have legal documents. We have court records.
Wait. You saying the FBI told you to bring your minister?
Yes.
What you need a minister for if you got information? What is the minister going to do?
Hello? That's what I said, too.
Bureau of Traders? What is the minister going to do if the minister
doesn't
know?
Well, your word wasn't good enough. Your word
I had legal documentation, and I had tape recordings of these people setting my young son up. And
oh,
they
my
said,
God.
Yes, tape recordings. That's what hurts so bad. And
have you
I had,
tried, have you, and I mean, I don't know, I'm just pulling straws now. Have you thought about going to the Justice Department?
What Justice Department? I ain't trying to be funny, but what which one?
I know what I was saying.
I've been to the U.S. Well, I've contacted every division of the U.S. DOJ, the FBI, the Southern Poverty Law Center, the NAACP. I was a member. I was a member with them, and they told me, look like you can handle it. Why don't you try the ACLU? And I'm like, huh? I'm paying you all membership dues.
Oh my God!
So I tried the ACLU. I didn't get an answer. I tried the National Action Network.
Right. That's
Al Sharpton.
Yes, and they have a branch leader or whatever in Louisiana.
Right.
And I offered to buy this man's gas to meet up with me. I'm just as desperate. No, he can't meet me. He got a lot of other stuff going on, but he'll get back to me. And that's been like 2 years ago, long before all
this. Oh, my God.
Then, let me see, the ACLU, NAN, Dateline, MSNBC, True TV. I mean, I
contacted the media, and the media told me, so what? I contacted them about the Jay Cochran firm getting judged by and say they didn't have an office in Georgia, in the state of Georgia. While they were advertising every day, they got the judge to dismiss our lawsuit for fraud, and the judge said they don't have a law firm in Georgia. And that was a big old lie. They on TV every few minutes. They were advertised all over the internet. They sang with other people at the Cochran firm. But see, you got a lot of these black people and white people who are a part of the New World Order.
Yes.
Well, this sounds
so
like the they were trying to do with the Gina Six, trying to run those young guys down the road.
Mm-hmm. He has an axe to grind with me, but he took it out on my son.
Right.
Okay, and so let me ask you something, Ms. Connor. Okay, so since we've had all these doors shut in our faces, and I'm saying you, but I'm just saying we, what could we do as a group to at least get this out, publicized, other than this, what we're doing now? What else can we do?
The only thing I feel like would help me, or help us, particularly my son, is some kind of media attention. I mean, I was hoping
the
U.S. DOJ, but that's just not working. You know, it's
you're needing some. Somewhere to get some massive public exposure.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Lita, I don't know if you're thinking like I'm thinking, but it's some things we need to work on.
Yeah.
Let me just say, please, that she needs an attorney to file appeals. You've heard the information now. She needs an attorney to file appeals for a son who is up for sentencing in August. And she needs an appeal for herself because right now around 70% of Catherine Connor's income is going to pay probation for a crime that never happened. So this is ridiculous, is wrong. They're impoverishing this family on purpose because this woman had the nerve to speak out and write a complaint against a judge and a DA after she was railroaded in court over a criminal matter that was really a civil matter. So we just asking for an attorney to please file appeals for them.
They spent so much money on
attorneys that they need a pro bono now. They spent thousands of dollars on attorneys.
Yeah,
yes.
But see, the problem is we have to find an attorney who wants to work with us.
That's the problem she's having, finding somebody
who's going to take that time out. You can throw money at an attorney, but is he actually going to do the job? And that's what she keeps getting is roadblock, is getting these attorneys that are not worth anything.
We need one
who's going to be for real.
They're afraid.
Do it pro bono because she's maxed out.
Yeah.
To pay an attorney.
Yeah, but we got to make sure even though he's pro bono, he still needs to know to do the job. You could be pro bono and not do the job.
Yeah, true, but normally on a pro bono, that's not like a public pretender. If you do a pro bono, odds are they have some kind of reason they want to help. Because pro bono, you're not even getting paid any kind of way.
Hold up. Let me ask you something. Who is the group of lawyers and college students that do the DNA thing? Who is that? What is that called?
That's the Innocence Project.
This isn't a DNA case right here. Yes,
so
I'm saying that's true.
Most major law firms have some time that they allocate for pro bono work. Most major law firms have that. I worked with lawyers for 15 years. And this is Mary Neal, Mary Loves Justice Online. I'm asking, please, one of your attorneys who've invited to listen tonight, would you please have mercy on Katherine Johnson and her young son? He went from 130 pounds to roughly 90 pounds this year, waiting on this sentencing.
Yes.
Because he's innocent. He's a young boy who's been sheltered. He works every summer. He went to school and graduated on time. And they're railroading him, it seems, into prison because his mother wrote a complaint against a judge and a DA who convicted her, and she feels like it should have been in civil court because it started out as a dispute between herself and a contractor. So I'm asking some of you attorneys to please help us to save Matthew Moore. Look online at Facebook for Attorney General Holder. Please save Matthew Moore. It's called Attorney General Holder. Please say Matthew Moore. You can put my name in, Mary Neal, Matthew Moore, and find out more information about the case. I've written about it a few times, and that's why I'm so censored, is because I find people like Katherine Connor, they find me online, and they ask me to please write about their injustice. And I did that, and we're bringing it to you now because I know that somebody cares about justice. Somebody who's listening, and we're asking you to please help this young man who was already a slim young man, and now he lost all the way down to 90 pounds, worrying and agonizing over facing Louisiana prison.
Now he's beginning to smoke.
He's
beginning to smoke.
He's smoking now?
Yes.
He never smoked
profusely. And he smokes profusely. I remember before all this happened, he would be the one that come in here and turn the light off, you know, on me, because I go to bed with the light on or with the TV on. And now he can't go to sleep without the TV being on.
Okay. Miss Katherine, you need public exposure. We need to get you in the media. We need to get you on TV. You understand what I'm saying?
I have tried. I mean, when this first happened.
But don't, baby, listen to what I'm saying, sweetie. Just listen real quick. Don't worry about what you've tried.
Okay.
You understand, we're trying to take you another direction now because now you're asking for help.
Okay.
Let us do our part and see what we can do with it, okay?
Okay.
Maybe they
I appreciate
need to see it from another perspective. You understand what I'm saying?
I understand.
So let us see what we can do on our end, because I see
Praise
you on
God.
Telling your story. I see it, and I see somebody listening, and I see somebody stepping in.
Okay.
Yeah,
so I appreciate anything that you all can do, you know. I
there's
really
also
do.
Some other avenues in the media that we could maybe get a massive number of print medias, especially throughout the state of Louisiana, and possibly I'm going to definitely be trying to contact Ms. Nielsen. She's been doing some writing, and we have some national avenues that we probably able to take that we may be able to make contact with. I'm going to talk to my contacts, and I'll be talking back with Salita, and we're going to see if we can get some things going.
We want to at least try to get your story out there.
Okay.
I mean, really out there.
Okay.
I know Brian has an excellent avenue. One, we already, you know, we're thinking the same lines. We already got one that we really think. I would like to come down there and do an interview with you face to face with my camera. That's what I would like to do.
Okay.
Start
and
from
definitely,
there.
Thank God for y'all. Thank God for people who will step up and help people.
Yes, Lord. I appreciate it so much.
Convictions.
Yeah, we appreciate
it
so much.
I'm trying to figure. I'm not no lawyer. I know a little bit. I was a union, my union's secretary, and I had to fight a lot of cases, and I learned just by doing that. But I'm just hearing a lot of injustices going on, and it's crazy. I'm just like amazed that you in this small town, but it's always in these small towns.
Yeah, it's always in where. Let me ask you this: is there any kind of black representation in y'all area?
Yes, me.
That's it.
What?
No organization, no nothing.
Man,
I'm it, and I'm not.
I know part of the problem is a lot
all
of
that, but I'm about the most vocal of verbal person. Maybe another lady I'm thinking of, like me, is having a similar problem.
Well, Mr. Connor, I got Miss Neal's number. I'm looking at it right now. I got that from Roz. But Miss Connor, if you would contact Roz, and she put you in contact with me and Salita and I. Definitely,
yes.
I know we'll be collaborating.
We'll work on our end as much
as we
can.
We'll collaborate together.
And speaking of Roz, Roz has done beautifully toward us and trying to advertise and promote our story.
Definitely keep me up to date on things.
Judicial justice movement, and I really appreciate it. Hello?
Hello? Yes? It's 650. Hello?
Yeah, this is Alexis. I was listening to the mother of Matthew Moore speaking, and I just wanted to let you know that I feel you with all my heart, and that I'll do what I can to put the word out there first to this radio program, because the way you explain in detail, and it's so different than when somebody reads something, it's to hear your voice and your energy and your love for your son and how you're standing by and all the things that you went through. You know, this is what really gets to the people. And so I just got through putting your program on different social networks. And I'll do what I can to get the word out.
Bless you. Thank you so much.
I feel you with all my heart, believe me. And
thank you.
The charges regarding sexual offenses is what we're speaking of. You know, to see young men being innocently. This is so preventable, but the arrogance of
let me just say this while you're on that,
uh-huh.
And believe it or not, the same teacher she gives him like the most improved, you know, like the certificate.
Yeah,
yes.
She gives him this at the end of the year.
Well, there's something wrong with that woman, that's for sure.
let me ask you this:
the most improved she. Yeah.
You guys, we got about 2 minutes to go.
Okay, Ms. Connor, could you give your, for somebody who wants to help you, could you give some kind of contact information for those who need to contact you that may be listening?
Yes, I sure will. Thank you. Catherine Connor at 225-629-5646.
Repeat that, please.
225-629-5646. Should I give my home address? I can do that.
Yeah, you can do that if you don't. I mean, it's up to you. It's up to you.
Oh, I can do it. Okay, P.O. Box 211, Wilson, that's Wilson, Wilson, Louisiana, 70789.
What's your zip code?
70789.
Wilson, Louisiana, P.O. Box, what now?
211.
Okay.
And that phone number is 225-629-5646.
That's yes. right.
Anybody
okay,
that would like to help Ms. O'Connor, her son, Matthew Moore, she's needing some desperate help. Please help her.
Yes. Well, thank you very much, Ms. Connor. Thank you for
thank
all the
you.
Callers who called in. Thank you, Ms. Neal, for bringing this to the light for us. You guys, we're going to try our best to help you as much as we can because you are a Louisianan and we're here and we should be able to help you some kind of way.
Thank you
okay,
so much.
Okay, ma'am? All right, then, you guys, you have a nice night and have a safe weekend. And bye-bye.
Bye.
Bye.